Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Welcome to Together Frown. We're just going to start right out tonight with Monique Johnson, Tea Talk. You can find her at healthymovementsinternational.com. And this weekend is an exciting time. There is a retreat in Texas. So you want to tell us about it and just go right on.
Yeah, thank you. We were just talking about my excitement for the retreat. I'm excited that opportunity to have a retreat and, you know, kind of make it a little of a health summit as well, to where by the end of the event, each person will have their own personal, customized, holistic health plan that supports them for the rest of the year, which is 2014. And we approach it from the spot of honor the body, which our body needs a lot of movement sometimes to support the, we were just talking about how cold it is. Also the muscles of the...
You're breaking up, Monique.
Yes, I have been in the place of breaking up all day.
Okay.
So I'm didn't get any better. So I'm hoping it gets a little bit better. I'm gonna move to a spot that I think is a little bit better cell wise.
Better now, yes.
Okay, very good. So I'll keep going. So we're doing a personal holistic health plan, which I encourage people to do even on their own, because you don't have to come to a retreat or something to do that. One, you honor that the things that the body needs to stay healthy, whether that's healthy in the amount of pounds or healthy in the structure of the muscle or just healthy in the cardio, like fitness. So all the things that it takes really to keep a good, healthy physical being, the physical layer of us, then all really you have to do is look at your calendar and say, hey, you know, I love to dance, so I'm going to put dance in my monthly calendar three times a month or twice a month or whatever. Or I love this different modality. So this is kind of how you can start to work a holistic health plan for yourself. So you put that into your schedule. It's something you love to do. You pick your movement that you really like, and you do it in such a way that you have flexibility. So it's like, you know, since my lovely friend Ruth is in the cold tundra. then, you know, if you know you love to dance and you're like, hey, I am going to dance for 30 minutes, you know, at least every week in the month of so-and-so, then you understand you can go to a dance class, but when it's like the frozen tundra, then you dance with, you know, you put on the music and dance in your living room or in your closet or wherever you love to dance.
Not the closet, dear, but anyway.
Well, a lot of times when I'm in the midst of trying to pick my clothes and stuff, I end up doing a little jig in the closet. So that would be how a person continues their support of a healthy physical layer. So, and as far as, like, the recommended national is at least 30 minutes four times a week. So for a person who is even starting to go on, a, like, a, just want to increase the movement
They can even walk. What I started when I get to where I'm stagnant is I will open my door and I will walk 15 minutes one way. And then
yeah.
I will turn around and walk 15 minutes back to my door. So so that's the healthy movement of supporting the physical being. But then, of course, we go to what we talk about here is the more subtle part of us, which is the energy being. So we relate to self in that way with the holistic health plan ongoing for the year by having practices that give the mind time to quiet or to release, to disengage from the stories of our life. So how we do that is through yoga nidra is just the best thing since sliced bread that I've found and the quickest a lot of times. But even for ones who are like, hey, I really don't have funds to put toward this, but I do want to have a healthy, holistic health plan for me, then what you can do is just Google online yoga nidra, and sometimes you can find them on YouTube for free. You can go even on my website and contact healthymovementinternational.com and connect to us through our contact us. And if you mention this Blog Talk Radio, then what we'll do is I will transfer you, I will send you an MP3 yoga nidra free of charge so you can kind of support your mind health that way. So anything that supports the mind is just an ongoing deep relaxation practice to release itself from all the to-dos and the clutter that goes up into the mind and stays there. Also, one of the things we do to help quiet the mind is using the breath work. And the complete breathing practices really help to quiet the mind as well. And then you free the spirit. And how you do that is to start to become aware of your passion in life. And how you know it's a passion is when you're in the midst of doing it, it's as if time stops. Like you cannot tell what time it is because you really are unconscious that time exists. When you have that feeling in the midst of an experience, you are doing something that is connected to your passion. Okay? So how to continually to get to support your freeness of spirit even more is when that starts to happen, you take note of it. And then once you've notated that, even whether it's in your mental notation or a journal notation, it's good to always have some journals if you're really trying to dig into what is my passion. You notate those things, and then you start to see, okay, I see that I was doing this specific thing first time, this specific thing the second time, and on the surface they may not look alike. So, but once you've gotten a few of those or a handful of those, then you can see the common thread, and that common thread is usually pointing you toward where your passion is. So one of the reasons I love the retreats is that we're able to go through this in person. And we're able to, we have classes there that are movement classes. So there will be yoga and there will be fitness classes and walks and stuff like that to do for the physical. We delve into the mental layer by restorative yoga, which really releases the body, which helps to release the mind. Of course, like I mentioned, yoga nidra, different meditations, and breath work. And then the best part I love at all, love the most, is delving into the passion. And a lot of times that takes just some experimenting and some co-listening, which is a practice that we do to where you really kind of just speak from your heart out into the world, out into the mirror of life itself. And then there's a partner by you shoulder to shoulder that is just there to witness. And that is a way to start to really dig into, okay, what is my passion? Because the mirror can mirror back to you, ding, you know, you've said that like five times, so obviously that's a part of your soul, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what we're going to be doing this weekend. And I'm so excited to have the opportunity to go through this process with ones again. This is my passion, And how I found my passion was going through the process that I just mentioned. So we are so looking forward to it. I'm diligently working on the education side of things as well. At least I was able to record the Yoga Nidra so that if I get an email of request, then I am able to get that out. But there's so much more that is in my heart to do that I'm working on in regards to education, so that ones that do not have the ability, no matter what is holding them back, whether it's family responsibilities, work, financial constraints, ones who truly do not have the ability to come to a summit or to come to a retreat can actually go down this process kind of on their own, but with me as kind of a partner to help kind of guide that and move it along. And how I'm able to do this is the programs that I'm working on now that you will see coming out on my website under courses. And so what this hopefully is going to do is to help to continue to support ones who do come to the retreat, but for ones who can't, they can still build their own customized holistic health plan that that supports their life, you know, and supports them being happy in life and creating what they want in life and creating a life that supports them staying in their passion. And if they decide, okay, I really would want to do my passion as my vocation, then also help, you know, become a partner in finding the roadmap to making that happen. Because the roadmap is within each individual person. Sometimes we just need the mirror to say, okay, I got this far, now next. You know, and I got this far, now next. Sometimes we just need the attaboys, and sometimes we just need a mirror to say, okay, this is where I need to look next. So that is coming up in 2014 as well. How did we get this all done? I have no idea.
I know you like to live in the moment.
Yes, and I really do, and I'm like now, at the beginning of this year, I could really feel a transition to be able to spend the time that I want to get this part of the business really done and really going. Because I do. I have over 1,700, I think, acquaintances and friends on Facebook. And it's always for all over the world, from South Africa to Australia to U.S. to, you know.
Yeah.
Say again.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't hear you. I know you had said something. I didn't.
Oh, no. I said, isn't that fun? To have people all over the world that you can talk to.
It is such a blessing. And what it does is it helps me, it keeps me so connected to that the human experience is very much there's a common thread through the human experience, no matter who you are, no matter where you are on this rock. And so that's one of the motivating factors, especially for this year, that I want to focus on, is that to make what I do available to all people, no matter what the constraints are, no matter where they are. It's like for anyone who really is at the point that they're like, okay, I want to find my passion, I want to have a healthy, happy life that is free from some of the unnecessary struggle and some of the unnecessary drama and pains that I have, then, you know, I feel honored to do whatever I can to get, you know, something in the hands of ones to support them in that journey, because that's the journey I took, and that's how I found my place of happiness and my place of being able to create consciously without having a lot of stuff that I'm creating unconsciously that sabotages what I want to create.
right, yeah. Because our unconscious does play bad tricks on us sometimes, yeah.
Yes. And the even the tea talks that I do, and I'm in the midst of putting together some awaken the awareness trainings for the tea talks. I finally got some of that stuff up on the website, but you know, it's about bringing into conscious awareness what is already there, because what's there is creating what is. I mean, it's creating in each moment what the next moment's going to be. You know, so having a conscious bringing up into the awareness and the intelligence so that we can see what's there. Because if you don't know what ingredients you have, you don't know what kind of cake you could cook. You know, you may end up cooking a cake that is just very basic because I only thought I had three ingredients. When you're like, hey, you have this abundance, this well to create from, it's just that you're unconscious of it all.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. But I love what you were saying about the mirroring. And, you know, while we know that everything is within us, it takes different tools to bring it out, and the mirroring is definitely one. Being accountable to someone or something, and even the calendar that you're talking about. Now, this isn't the calendar you're putting your date with your husband on. This is the calendar totally for your own, like your workouts, your food, whatever, your meditations. This is the self-care. Yeah. And I like that idea a lot. I have a very good friend that takes care of my accountability because she knows, you know, like my deadlines for whatever. And so she will keep me, you know, like just prod me if I need it kind of thing.
Yes.
I do that for her. And that is excellent to have somebody there that you can talk to. And, you know, just a support system, but you still feel accountable. Like when people work out together, you know, you make that morning when you just don't feel like getting out there. But when you know that you're supposed to meet your friend down the end of the block and go running together, you're more apt to do it.
Yes, yes. And what I have found, I mean, that is, it's key to, one, have that personal calendar for your personal health. A lot of times, ones who are even thinking of that, a lot of times they're already givers. So all of the energy of health and well-being is being flooded towards someone, out of them, towards someone, that it never comes back around to them, you know. So for me, it was very important for me to learn to do that for self first because, you know, if I don't have it for self, then who knows what I'm giving out, you know?
Yeah,
It's mixed up with a whole bunch of stuff that quite possibly is not healthy. So, I mean, I love that. And the fact, too, of the accountability is very important. And so as you're speaking of that, Ms. Ruth, it's like I continue to integrate that into my knowing as I build these courses because that's the point. It's like, one, my intention is to help a person to build that relationship with themselves, one, because the beauty of the relationship you have with yourself is going to be reflected in all your other relationships.
Right.
And so, like that person in the mirror, but it's funny how with the YouTube tea talks, it's as if there is a person in the mirror talking. That's kind of how some of the ones who, because I keep certain ones that I'm like, okay, watch it and kind of critique, see if there's anything that, you know, you really would have wanted to hear more out of that. Mm-hmm. And so it does, it's like being in the mirror with the tea talk of someone who's like, okay, this is a subject, this is a different way of looking at it, this is a different perspective. What is your core? What is your core response to that? Does it resonate? Does it not resonate? If it does resonate, are you showing that it resonates in your life? When in your life are you kind of going against what really resonates to your core? Or maybe never that's happening. But all of those questions are what starts to bring into conscious awareness stuff that's underneath the consciousness. And so I love how you said that, you know, having a responsibility, having that holding self responsible. And it's a beautiful thing when you can have a friend like you have that even y'all can kind of go through that together, whether that's that or something else. You know, you're kind of holding each other responsible for their own holistic, healthy way of finding their way through this life. you know. So it's a beautiful thing. It really is. And, I mean, kudos for you, because I have a friend like that, too. And actually, she's down for the week because she's coming to the retreat.
Wonderful. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And we have traveled this journey past probably 8 years, kind of being the mirror for each other, sometimes a lot, and then sometimes it seems like our journey will kind of take us apart, you know,
yeah.
to work on our
yeah.
own stuff, and then
yeah.
it'll bring us kind of back together, and we mirror each other so very beautifully. So sometimes, too, one of the things that's needed is knowing how to be a clear mirror. And even that's something that we teach. Say again.
No, that's true. And that has to be learned also.
Yeah.
That has to be one of those very conscious things, because you don't want to get the water all muddied with your own emotions and feelings being projected.
Yes, exactly. And so that's one of the key points, too, that I really put the intention out in this year, in this 2014 year, to also have a few programs, a few courses on how to be a clear mirror. And it's, for me, it's something that gradually kind of naturally starts to happen as I become more self-aware, because as I become more self-aware, then I understand when I'm projecting. And I understand when another is projecting on me. So it helps me to keep my mirror clear, but it also helps me to see when the mirror that I'm looking at is not clear.
Yeah, no, that's true. But so much, I mean, it just has to do with being aware and practicing that awareness in whatever form that takes.
Yeah.
It's conscious
and
creation. It's exciting.
Yes.
It is.
And really, and like you said, practicing it on in any way that you can on a day-to-day basis. You know, and then it really just becomes, because it truly is bringing up something from within that's already there. So then it's not, once you touch on it and you kind of practice touching on it each, you know, in every day, and sometimes that takes, like, questions, asking the self questions. But once you've kind of started to do that for a while, once I started doing that for a while, then it just kind of became a part of how I experienced life, because it wasn't like I was putting on something. It was like, it is like I brought it up from within, so it is a part of me all the time. It's just now a part of me that I have access to on a day-to-day basis. And for me, it's like everybody has that. It's just a practice.
Exactly. I mean, we everything we need, and even more, is within us. But
yeah.
we are finding different ways to bring it out. And so I'm very much in spirit with you all this weekend, Monique.
Yes.
I'll be having tea and thinking about you guys. So I'll think about you, and then I'll go off and meditate or something, because it's like, okay, I'll do it while they're doing it. And
yes. And we're going to have lots of tea, my sister. So whenever you have a cup of tea in the next 3 days, think of us.
Okay. I'll do that. I love
so
it.
Much love. I send much love out to you, my dear sister.
Well, just have a, yeah, me too. But just have a wonderful retreat, and then tell us all about it next week.
Will do. Have a beautiful night. Signing off from Dallas. And my lovely Miss Ruth, and I'm going to send you some sun, girl.
Okay.
This is Monique Johnson with HealthyMovementsInternational.com. Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Monique Johnson from HealthyMovementsInternational.com, and we were going to have my friend Rango staying with us tonight, but due to some technical problems, we are rescheduling him, and we're going to go right to our favorite ex-IDFer, Sarit Jacobson. Hi.
Hi. Oh, wow. I have nightmares from IDF.
I know you do. But I wanted to say that there's a great interview, and I put it on Aramarte Fio. I also posted it on my own wall on Facebook with you, where you're talking about the your short time with the IDF and how that helped you become an Israeli pro-Palestinian activist here in the States. So I just want to plug you on that. And that's bringing you lots of new friends and offers to speak at universities. I'm so excited, Sarit.
Yeah, people are very, very interested in what is going on there. I'm finding out people care about human rights. A lot of people do.
Yes.
I will always be on the side of the oppressed. And there's no doubt that Palestinians are extremely oppressed.
Yeah, yeah. That's but I think it's good that, you know, you have something that they want to hear. You can speak at the university and different groups around and let people know right from, you know, that expression, the horse's mouth. But because you are Israeli and you are an ex-IDF person, so, you know, that carries a lot of weight.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I do it, my friends and family still live in Israel, and I don't believe they're going to have peace the way they're heading.
Right.
So
yeah, there can't be.
Being
pro-Palestinian
is the best thing for Israel to be if they want to survive.
Well, you know, there can't be peace when it's very obvious that the government, especially Netanyahu, doesn't want it because they keep building illegal settlements on occupied land, and then they yell at the Palestinians because the Palestinians don't want to have peace talks. Well, in the first place, it is illegal. From the United Nations, everything, occupied land, it's supposed to be a temporary thing, and you're not supposed to build on it or anything?
Absolutely not.
But absolutely, they have taken, and they just keep taking the land. They just boot people out of their homes and either put the squatters, which is what we call the settlers, in those homes, or they just demolish the homes and build something else.
It's heartbreaking.
It is.
It makes me sad that most Israelis don't know it. When I tell them, that it sounds too awful for them to believe sometimes.
That's it. Because they're so brainwashed. If they really, really knew the truth, they wouldn't stand for it. Just like in this country, people are finding things out, and
yes,
they're saying, okay, you know, enough of that. I'm very impressed with what some of the organizations we have in this country, what is it? Is it Jews for Peace and a few other groups of Jewish people who
Many.
Are fighting
yes.
hard. Yeah. For
I'm talking to a lot of Jews from all over the world who are absolutely amazed by what's going on there.
Yeah. And very, very ashamed.
Yeah, I'm learning a different Jewish religion, one that's full of light and love and beautiful.
The way it really is. I mean, the way the religion really is, not what we think it's become because of a few of these crazy right-wing radical.
I don't know much about it, though. I'm not very qualified. I haven't had much of a religious upbringing.
Well, you know that the chaim, or however you say it, the toast. To life. I mean, the Jewish, the real Jewish religion is like a lot of religions. I mean, it's based on love and compassion and celebrating life, you know?
Absolutely.
And so many different, not just the Jewish, but the Christian and others have been somehow by like right-wing fascist Nazi kinds of whatever people who have taken all, like in this country, the Puritans or some people who wanted to, you know, say that anything that causes pleasure is from the devil or something. And, you know, that is the most absurd thing to say. But we're supposed to enjoy life. And that's what we're working hard so that everybody can enjoy it. Not
exactly.
Just a privileged few.
The war and peace activists all around the world is going to have to stop. It's really exposing the powers that be.
It is. And I mean, just think.
I know many people. Yes?
I was just going to say, when all that money is no longer used to fund the war machine, can you imagine?
Yeah, we can make it an amazing place.
Yes, yes. You just wrote a new song.
Yeah, I noticed America's been at war about 12 years straight now. That's a long time for a country to be at war.
Well, I read, and you may have something that said that since 1776.
Yeah, I saw that.
America's there's only been what? Is it not maybe 20 years or less that it wasn't at war somewhere?
That's amazing. I wrote a song about it.
That's disgusting. It's horrible to think.
Yeah, I really don't like war. I experienced a missile attack once from Iraq when I was 18. It's a very horrifying experience to hear bombs fall and not know which one is going to hit you next.
I
don't wish it on anyone.
Well, that the PTSD which you have,
I jump every time I hear an explosion. Still,
yeah, and I mean that will be with you forever.
Oh, well, luckily we survived it. But I remember one fell not far from my house.
Oh,
luckily no one was there. It was an empty restaurant in the middle of the night.
Oh,
so no one was
empty. Yeah,
almost sounds like a flag where no one gets every time a missile falls.
Well, that I don't think. I mean, you're just never going to get over that. Just like all these children who they've only known this all their life in Gaza.
Yeah, what I have is nothing. I mean, it was just for a month or two months, I think.
Right, but that's with you for your whole life, and so you think about them. I mean,
the fear was only on the first day. The second day, I slept through it and everything.
Wow.
Very strange how we get used to everything. Me and my mother totally got used to it.
You got used to it. I mean, but still, that doesn't mean that, because you still are bothered by noises. So you got used to it at the time on a level, but a deeper level.
Yeah. We blocked it out or something.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's what these kids in Gaza are doing. I mean, they keep studying through it all. And I think that they've split off like a piece of their personality or something.
It's a terrible life.
Especially
to see your parents scared. No kid wants to see their parents scared, you
absolutely
know.
Not. As long as we have that kind of a... that stabilizing factor, I mean, they're our parents. They will take care of us. And then to see them frightened?
Yeah.
How horrible.
Now, some of my friends did not handle it well at all.
No.
Everyone handled it different. Some people would get sick during the attacks, throwing up out of fear.
Yeah.
Some people would shake. I was bartending at the time, and there would be a missile attack and we'd all go in the kitchen, and I remember some of us would be fine and others would seem stressed.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, you go to like the safest place. Well, it's just like, you know, I live in Illinois where there's lots of tornadoes. And
yeah, that's scary too.
You know, I mean, that kind of a thing, you know, so people, they get used to in a way, but they're never quite, you know, and most people,
yeah.
I don't really, but most people have like a place that they run to hide, or, you know, or they have something in mind. We know we should get in the doorway and hold on to, you know, different things. And it just becomes, well, that's what we do. And I watch a lot of old movies, and not a lot, but quite a few that that's my choice, the old movies. And I see some of the war ones when they would be in Britain and they would have the air raids. And it was just the ordinary thing. People, they grab their kids and they go underground. And I, when I see that, I just think of Gaza. There's no place underground. I mean, they just, you know, try to get in a central room and hope.
So. Yeah, it's very sad. They don't have a shelter in Gaza, by the way. And Israel uses excessive force. I found that out during the Lebanon War almost 15 years ago. I was watching it here in the United States on CNN or something, and they were just using white phosphorus on Beirut.
Well, white phosphorus seems to be one of their real biggies.
It's illegal to use. It's a chemical weapon.
Right. And that's what they used during Operation Cat Lead in Gaza. And we know that a lot
and
of
Israeli
that...
people, most of the Israeli people I have spoken to have no awareness of it.
No. Because they have done such a good job. It's like the media here in this country has done a pretty good job, let's face it, of keeping the truth from people. But this is a big country, and we have some kinds of freedom left. And because of alternative media, a lot more people are finding out the truth.
Thanks. Absolutely. I met a lovely lady online that found out the truth on Facebook.
Yeah.
And she actually went from one extreme to the other, thanks to social networking. She totally changed all her political opinions. That's beautiful. Really lovely lady.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, that's what that's power of social media. And while I didn't change my mind on Palestine, because ever since I really found out about Palestine, I've been, very pro. But thanks to the internet, I did. Well, and the lousy government, or the lousy job the government in the U.S. is doing, I totally changed my political views. And so I know the power of social media. And when you have...
knowledge is so important.
Exactly. You
have any
to,
running democracy.
It's all out
maybe
there.
Maybe one day we can get there.
We will. We will.
Hope so. We'll do all we can.
I'm very optimistic. And that doesn't mean that I don't think that we're going to have a hell of a ride, okay? But we will get there. It's worth fighting for.
Oh, for
but,
sure.
Yeah. That's... well, now, I didn't... What was going on in Israel and Palestine this week, Sarit, since we've talked?
Just same everyday night raids, arrests, arresting young abled men, which hurts the whole family.
Well, I did see that,
burning trees, lots of trees, building settlements, just more humiliation every day.
Yeah, I know that they raided more homes because they love to raid in the middle of the night and roust everybody up and take the young men.
Jail. And bombing Gaza every day, like once a day, just
because they have nothing else to do. I mean, basically, it's not because
it looks like it. And the young man they killed really looks like a nice. I'm pretty psychic. I just look at people and I know, and that man is not a bad person. It's just ridiculous who they always end up picking on.
Yeah.
And there's more and more proof online that there is full cooperation between Hamas and IDF, by the way. They're all in each other's
pockets. Anytime you have a political organization where... you know, somebody had talked to me about how Hamas, because I'm not saying that they're the worst thing that ever happened, and they are duly elected. If they held that election now with people knowing what they know, they may not have elected them. But
at least they help the poor. I appreciate that they help the poor.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they
in Israel, the government not help the poor. They let people eat out of the trash. They let mothers and children being thrown out of homes. There's nothing Jewish about that. People have been burning themselves in Israel. They hate it. They want to leave.
You're not going to hear that on mainstream media. That
I want people
not.
To know we had six people lit themselves on fire, so even IDF people. People are not happy with anything right now. Nobody's happy. The society has become corrupt from being so military. You know, everyone's in the military. Makes people hard.
Well, it does. And people, like you said before, that a lot of the people that go into it, they don't go in because they want to, but, well, they have to, unless they have a real good reason not to. And they're afraid not to. But then also, sometimes, I mean, they actually, people do believe the propaganda. And so while they really don't want to go, they still feel almost honor-bound because they think that people are out to
have
get
that. Like that. Exactly.
That is just so totally nuts.
It is. It's totally nuts. I've spoken to some disabled Vietnam veterans at the time, and they said, like, being at war more than 6 months is totally going to scar anyone for a lifetime. And in Israel, people are in military situations all the time where they get into little things that will cause PTSD. I can't even call it war, but the Israeli boys are stressed out. When they go in the territories, they're very scared.
Well, because they've heard all these lies.
Yes.
And so they, instead of just kicking back and just waiting to see if anyone attacks them, they're ready to attack any, you know, school kid they see.
Yeah, they're so terrified.
Yeah. And that was, now remember, you've read things about the Vietnamese War, the Vietnam War. The way it was with, like when I mentioned the U.S. GIs would see them coming down the road and they just kill them because they thought, well, they might have a, you know, grenade or something because they were so terrified. And they had reason to be terrified, but, you know, they shouldn't have been there in the first place. But I'm not blaming the government. Because I was just going to say, way back then, there wasn't all this, there wasn't the internet. People didn't know what was going on. And so they believed the government. They believed that, whatever reason, the people from Vietnam were going to, you know, kick America's asses. You know, whatever. It was just such a bizarre thing. But they wanted to go to war there because of resources and different things in the
communism.
The Pacific Rim countries. And so, you know, they made up the lie of Tonkin, and, you know, since they've come out and said, well, that was a real lie. But, you know, people, so they were willing to fight. They believed that they were saving us from being...
I've been told so. It's totally insane what they do. That's such a crime.
But I give them the fact that they didn't understand because knowledge was not like it is now. But now, people in the military, men and women who are going to the military, I don't cut them that much slack. They're going because they are promised an education or something, and they go without even thinking about what they're doing. That they're in a country that has never done anything against us. They put themselves in denial so much so that they can believe the lies so they can go and do that.
And then they come back, they suffer.
Well, and then they come back and kill themselves. I mean, we have a very high rate of veteran suicides. In this country.
Oh, yeah, in every military they have high veteran suicide.
It's rising, because now people can't make excuses. They used to really believe, I mean, even, you know, hundreds of years ago, they would believe that, this king, you know, we have to do something about him, or we have to fight for this, whatever. But now there's no excuse. It's like we know because of social media. You and I talk to people on Skype. We talk to people around the world. We know. We all cut ourselves. We all bleed red. We all want the best for our kids, our families. We're all
the same.
We know we're the same. And because of that, we're not going to go to war with any of these people. But that
absolutely.
Is what the government wants. You know, they want people to be divided. And they try to, you know, put an us in the them.
They'll try any way they can to divide us, class, race, gender.
Yeah. All of the above.
They'll even give us different information. So we will argue over who has the right information.
Yeah. Isn't it bizarre how much power we've allowed?
Like right-wing news, left-wing news, and it's different news. So
right.
They really break
so
the people.
They're the same. I mean, they're the left and the right. They're very big capitalists. They're very much into class and very much,
banks.
Yeah. I mean, so there's not that much difference between a big time capitalist Democrat and a big time capitalist Republican. There's
hard
the
to tell now that.
And that's who they are. But I know you wanted to talk about some of the politics here. I wanted to ask you, you know, West Virginia had that poison in the water from the coal cleaning compound. And 300,000 people were without water.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that terrorism? So many people are going to be sick from this in the long term.
Right. I mean, they told them, oh, the water is okay. However, if you're a pregnant woman, don't drink it still. And then the hospitals just keep getting people who are sick. The water is not okay to drink. And then I just read that one of the other chemicals in it, it may not be as bad as that first chemical, but it's pretty bad. It's another poison, and it's still in the water. So, you know, you can't – I mean, how can you get it out of the water? Let's get real here. They were just hoping it would go downstream into a bigger river and
– be terrified to drink water now. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It looks like they're acting like – elementary school children would be more responsible.
Well, I did read that the company declared bankruptcy.
Yeah. They shouldn't be allowed to declare bankruptcy because they make a mistake.
Not. But they did so that they don't have to pay anything out to all these people that were done the damage to, which may be lasting throughout their lives. And then, you know, these people, they'll just start up a business somewhere else. I mean, because we have all these corporations with offshore money and everything.
Yes.
They're no more bankrupt than whatever, but they declared it because, sure, they don't want to pay.
Brothers Freedom Industries is the one who is responsible for the contamination. Anyone can Google it.
Again,
they do so much bad.
I don't know that. I don't know how people can look at themselves in the mirror. People that run those companies, and then people who have shares in that company. How can they look at themselves?
They were not happy.
No, they can't be happy people. I mean, how do they look at their kids and their grandkids and say, well, you know, you live here, so far you're okay, so we don't care about those other people and their kids, how sick they get or whatever.
The most unhappy people I ever met, some of them were very rich people.
Yeah, because you can't – I've had this talk with one of my friends who comes from – there was money – when she was growing up. I mean, quite a bit of money, and it was passed on down and everything. And we have these talks because she thinks that there's, I guess, some value in inherited money, and I don't, because I think that in the first place, nobody should have so much that they really need to worry about it. We should have systems in order in a socialist country where everybody is taken care of, and so you don't try to accumulate money to pass on to your descendants because they can't have it. If you die with money, it goes back to the state. I think that's just the most fair thing, because there would be enough work and money and whatever to take care of everybody. So, you know, you just make your money, spend your money, enjoy your life. Don't worry about saving it or something, because your kids should have the chance to, you know, live their life and be responsible for themselves, not worrying about, are you going to leave them enough money? Because like you said, money doesn't buy happiness at all.
We have a problem with money. It seems that people are not being able to make ends meet in most parts of this country nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that, I mean, if we're really honest and we get down to it, we have been, we were lulled into, well, some of us, not me, because I don't charge things, but a lot of people were lulled into that, well, just charge it. Like, you really need this, so you should just get it and charge it, and, you know, you'll be able to pay for it. Well, now they find they can't. And there's something to do with, you know, the fact that we only have 5% of the population, and we're using up, what is it, 35 to 40% of the resources of the planet. You know, look around you at most Americans. Now, I'm not talking about you're really, really, really poor people who are living in their cars. But I'm talking about others that they have things that they really don't need because they fell for that. You know, like you can only wear one pair of jeans. You don't need 25 pairs, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And unless you're a performer, you really don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there couldn't be exceptions, but it's like people were talked into that. They fell for it. Dumbed down Americans,
yes,
watching commercials on TV, you know, oh, you need this, you need that. You can't live without that. If you have this, you're going to get the girl. If you wear this kind of makeup, the men are going to be falling down for you. And it's like people weren't taught to think. So they go for all that. They try to get all that. And then they can't pay for it. So I think that we're having, like, there's some kind of a moral, spiritual crisis or something in the country where people need to figure out what's really important.
I agree.
And, you know, it isn't that third car. It's maybe, you know, cutting back on your work schedule and spending some time with that kid of yours who, you know, has all the signs of growing up to, you know, getting older and being a juvenile delinquent. I mean, take care of things at home. You know, work on relationships, your friends, your families. This is where the real happiness and contentment come from. But, God,
absolutely,
that's my bandwagon. But I just think that we're emphasizing the wrong thing. So, but like you said, I mean, there's so many people who, even not with charge cards and all, I mean, are really between rent and maybe the car payment or something, or their house payment, and putting food on the table, it's hard. So there's
parts of the revolution this way.
Yeah, well, this is what causes revolutions. When people can't feed their kids, they get very angry.
It's unfair that people should slave and still be poor. There's something wrong.
No, absolutely not.
I feel like we have slavery right now, and I live in a pretty poor part of town. It seems more like slavery sometimes.
Well, you know, it is. It's wage slavery. And even the people who, see, we still have people who don't understand that they're wage slaves, because, you know, they're making maybe $100,000 a year, whatever, and they think, oh, I'm doing okay. They don't get it, that they are still a wage slave. The corporations own them. And nobody should be slaving away. And minimum wage, please. You know, that's just not...
impossible to raise a family on it.
Yeah, well, that's why we have mothers and fathers both working, and maybe one of them's got two jobs. They all may be part-time jobs because full-time jobs now are hard to come by. And
yeah, everyone I know is working two jobs or working much.
Well, you know, well, recently I met a young woman, re-met her. I knew her when she was, I guess, well, they said it had been 8 years since we'd all been together. And so she is, she's about 20, I think, now. And she is living in a fairly decent-sized city, and she's working three jobs. And I said, well, you know, are you saving money for school? What's up? And she said, well, no, they're all part-time. And she said, it's just what it takes for me to have my apartment and live. And, I mean, she's a sweetheart, very honest young woman, and she's she doesn't have expensive taste. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she is just trying to live. And so she's got three part-time jobs to do it.
That's pretty incredible.
And, yeah. I mean, so I think there's a lot of that going on.
My favorite scholar, Michael Parenti, talks about capitalism like no other scholar. He really exposes it well and
he's
the
wonderful.
Way they use language to disguise it. Yeah, he's so wonderful.
Yeah.
I recommend anyone to subscribe to his YouTube channel.
Well,
it's
Brian
great.
And I had him on our show, Progress Toward Democracy, a couple times. Everybody loves Michael.
Yeah,
he's just a very, very nice man. Very humble, very everyday. He puts on no airs, but he's brilliant. And he totally tells it like it is. Yeah.
And he said he came from a very poor working class family, and that is why his parents never had much time. And when they did, they were grouchy because they were worried. And it's another aspect of capitalism that is rarely spoken about. It actually does make people depressed.
Well, it does, because when you're working those kind of hours and you can't spend it with your family, and then when you manage to have a day off, you're just exhausted, and not just physically, but in your heart, in your soul. And so
no
then
wonder.
You don't give your family the best of you then. You sort of give your family what's left over.
Yeah.
And
it's harsh.
Know, yeah. And, well, now, Michael Parenti, he's one of those people, I mean, he pretty much... he doesn't have any money now either because he's told us that. And, you know, a lot of people who are authors don't necessarily make a lot of money on their books and things. So, I mean, he's not, like, living high on the hog now, even though he's very well known in certain circles and everything. He's not one of those capitalists, what I want to say. Anyway, I mean, he's not gained a lot of wealth from all of his efforts.
I'm sure quite the opposite. I'm sure
exactly.
No one wants to hear what he has to say in this cap. He even talks about that.
Yeah,
even
I mean, he has
Hollywood.
Oh, the people who love him
always
love
capitalist him. Reality in their films.
Yeah, but he has a lot of fans. They just don't happen to be of the government type, you know, or the capitalist. It's like, no.
I think he's a man of truth, Very intelligent.
Very, very, very intelligent. A man who, you know, he walks his talk. And so those are the people I respect. People aren't afraid to put it out there and live it. I just think that, and I think that if we're going to talk it, we need to live it. I'm very big on walking your talk. So I guess that's one of the reasons why you rarely see me buy new things stuff like that. I mean, I'm just not going to feed into these corporations.
That's wonderful.
You know? I mean, and I will, you know, with the electronic stuff, if I have to have it, I have to have it kind of thing, I will do it. But most other things, I mean, books and everything, I usually get them used. So
I think that's going to be the only way in the end. But we have to get rid of corporate personhood somehow.
Exactly. And so that's what, you know, because I know people who say it, but then they just can't wait to run out and, you know, hit the stores and buy all this new stuff. And it's like, well, you know, you're not living what you're talking. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't buy something new if it's, you know, but they do say that don't buy if it's bad. I mean, really think about it. Do you really need it? Does your kid really need it? Kind of thing. So that's pretty much when my close friend and I go shopping. I mean, our shopping is to the market, right, to get food, which, of course, I buy new. You know, we do that. We'll have coffee somewhere. We'll go to a couple of thrift stores. I'll get some used books, you know, that kind of thing. Like, we don't go to malls. That's just not, you know, part of our lifestyle.
Anyone wants to support the Women of Palestine, they can go to the website of Women in Hebron, and they make clothes and jewelry. Yeah. Beautiful.
Remember Blaine? When Blaine was on, he was helping sell some of the beautiful embroidered dresses and that some Palestinian people brought over. Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's it. If you're going to, one of the last new things I bought was, now how do I say it?
Sophia?
Kafia. From Palestine. That was one of the last new things, the scarf, the black and white. From
Kafia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it will keep you cool in the summer.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know you can buy them. They're making them in China now. However, mine came from the only factory in Palestine that's making them. But, you know, I just don't, and I don't have any desire to buy all these new things when I think about them coming from factories in Bangladesh and Cambodia where the kids are forced to work.
Sickness.
You know, I can't do it. It's just I don't need things that desperately. So
it's terrible. I'm subscribed to Journeyman Pictures on YouTube and watch it quite often, and you can see all the struggle in the factories and the protests and the violence.
Yeah. Well,
he made a few documentaries about it.
And we just have to we have to keep telling people about that and make people see what they're doing contributes to it.
The people who work in those factories sleep in them too.
Yes.
On the floor.
Yes.
That's slavery.
Well, it is slavery. Remember last year that in China those factories were putting up the nets because people had started jumping out of the windows to kill themselves?
Absolutely.
Instead of giving them a raise or being nicer to them, they put up nets. I mean, how horrid is that? If
some people have no soul or lost it.
No.
Must be something
in
their education system.
Well, it shouldn't have surprised me. But recently I did find out that all the clothes and things for the military, I shouldn't say all, but most of the clothes for the military, the U.S. military, is made in those factories in Asia where they pay people nothing. It's not made in this country. It's made there. So the U.S. government supports slavery. But that comes as no surprise to us.
Capitalism,
you know?
No feeling.
No, absolutely not. People are numbers.
Something like that, absolutely, or less. I've been studying a bit about World War II Germany more and more, and I found some weird similarities between World War II in Germany and Zionism, things I never got to study growing up in Israel. For example, the Germans had people that settled into new homes and were called settlers, while the indigenous people moved to the basement for a while.
Okay, now the homes, the new homes the Germans settled in, who owned those homes originally?
The Jews.
Okay, so then the Zionists are doing the exact same thing.
Exactly the same thing. And Polish people, too. I have a Polish friend. She said Poland lost 6 million people in the World War II also. And that the Germans were very cruel to the Polish. And she says she doesn't think they have changed much ever since.
She doesn't think that the Germans have changed?
She doesn't think they have.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have another friend who lives in Germany who's quite appalled by what he's seeing there, a Serbian friend. So people have to be on the lookout. Also, the way they build the concentration camps in Germany reminds me of that wall in Palestine, the 700-mile-long wall or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty similar, and the watchtowers have the same architecture.
I think I saw something about that they look, I guess watchtowers are going to look pretty similar, but there's something spooky about that. That people who had this done to them would just turn around and do it.
Yes, I heard too many stories from the Holocaust as a child from survivors, so I almost feel like I was there and almost have PTSD from there. So when I see the wall in Palestine, I automatically think of the Holocaust.
I could see that.
It's my first thought. Nothing else. It looks the same. We shouldn't be copying them anyway. And using dogs.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. Why? I think
what
the wall separated East and West Berlin, because that was separating one people. And that's what this wall does. It separates
Absolutely.
The people who actually should be, you know, just one people. So that's
it's a
what
shame
I think.
They're our brothers.
Yeah.
We get along really well.
Well, I mean, you have friends who are in mixed relationships and mixed marriages.
And happy.
And happy, right.
Be happy,
and
yes.
I thought it was funny, funny in a just a strange way. When you said that one of your girlfriends said she'd been in a restaurant or something and she and her boyfriend were kissing and he went to the washroom and a couple of the girls there came over to tell her that he was Arab.
Oh, and yeah. They came to warn her. They said, "Are you Jewish?" And she said, "Yes."
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's amazing how racist that society has become.
They wanted to make sure she understood. And she said, "Well, yeah, I know." Good for her. But she's a scholar.
She's a very smart woman. I don't meet too many amazing scholars like that. I admire her.
Yeah, and I mean, and she didn't try to hide the fact or say, "Really, I didn't know," or anything. She just said, "Well, I know." Like she knows he's Arab. And so when he came back out, she kissed him again. Like, you know,
she has a beautiful spirit.
Yeah.
And if you are born in Jerusalem and they are born in Jerusalem, you're in the same town all your life, so you're going to meet.
Of course. I mean, you just will. There's no, you're going to meet, and people are going to be attracted to each other. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of mixed marriage. We're not allowed to marry them, but there's 20,000 Israeli women living in occupied Palestine married to Palestinians. according
to... Right, and we'll try to get one of them to come on and talk with us, because I think it's wonderful that people are stepping out of that and saying, okay, fine, you know. I love him, I'm going to marry him, and I'll be living in Palestine now. Yeah.
It's just across the street anyway.
Yeah. If it just wasn't so sad and heartbreaking, the whole thing would be funny, you know? I mean, it's just like a very, very bad movie that nobody would believe.
Exactly.
Say, oh God, I can't even watch it because, I mean, it's just nothing could be like this. And then we, you know, shake our heads and say, well, this is the real thing. This is the way it is.
It is.
But we're doing what we can. And you, it was a lovely interview you did. Like I said, it's on Facebook. And we're going to look forward to hearing about your talk at the, I believe, University of Kentucky, is it?
Yeah, whenever I decide to go, I'll tell you about it.
Well, I know you're shy. I know that. But
not this, really.
Oh, okay. So this will be a good, this will be good.
Yeah, yeah. I got used to singing a lot in this town, so after a while, it's nothing.
Well, I guess also Occupy brought a lot of that out too.
Yeah, and Occupy, nobody's even thinking. Everyone was very excited with ideas.
Yeah. And
storming and great
things.
Ideas.
Well, that's one of the many things that I credit Occupy with. People are learning skills, and speaking to others was one of them. So
we had great people come, scholars, writers, journalists. Everyone spoke. Veterans for Peace came. We had people from all over the world. Very exciting. I wish something like that would happen.
Well, it allowed you to network. So you started, you know, building ties with these people. And you'll be with them again. Because, I mean, that's what this whole thing is about. We're finding out the people we can work with and trust. Because
Nashville is helping the homeless right now.
Yeah.
They're putting them in churches so they don't freeze to death, and making sure they have food and clothes and helping them get back on their feet. And then there's another group of Occupy Nashville that are helping people who live in slum housing.
Ah. Well, it is sad that we have so many houses that have been possessed in this country. And I've heard varying numbers. I've heard that there was one person homeless for every six, and then I've heard there's one person that's homeless for every 18 or 19 houses that are empty. Anyway, we know that every homeless person could be in a house.
That's crazy.
And it's crazy that we're having to put people in churches and things just to keep them from freezing to death.
And they're veterans, and they're people who have been abused as children. A lot of them are mentally ill. I met a lot of them here on the street. I talked to them. It's good to talk to people and ask them why they're homeless or try and see why.
Yeah.
Many of them, none of them is their fault. None of them.
No.
All had very hard lives.
These are not people who gambled and drank the money away. No, that's not the way
it
works.
And I know the homeless women get raped sometimes.
Oh, it's very scary. That's why they try to pair up with another person or partner up with another male or female. I mean, a male who will protect them, or another woman or something. They don't want to be their own.
No, they don't.
No.
Very dangerous.
This should not be happening in any place in the world. And I never...
We have a homeless shelter here, but the homeless people told me that there's not enough place for all of them in it.
Well, and sometimes the shelters are, if they don't have guards, and I don't mean necessarily guards with guns standing around, but I mean people who are awake all night, Sometimes the few things they do have get stolen.
That's crazy, yeah.
And I mean, so it's a real rough thing. I don't know. But
we don't have this problem in every country in the world. We can learn from the countries that don't have this problem.
Right, where people actually just take care of each other.
And
aren't so swamped with all this capitalist bullshit.
Yeah, I have a good friend in Finland, for example. In Finland, they get free high education, free healthcare, free housing if you're out of job, food, money.
Yeah,
you don't let nobody behind.
A guaranteed income is a good thing. That's another socialist program. So everybody would get like living income. And then if you wanted to have your own little business, or if a few of you wanted to, you know, have a business together, whatever, well, that you could do that too. But everybody.
And we're number one in the world in education.
Yeah, well, I mean, free healthcare and free education, and you know, plenty to eat and a place to live, and then from there on,
really help.
You can do whatever.
Try it. Yeah.
So it's our dream. And it's going to happen. So, my friend, thank you so much. And
pleasure.
See you next week. And if when you do record this new song, make sure we know.
Oh, yeah, I will. I'll let you know. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, you paint what's happening and write and sing what's happening. So it's good. Thanks, Reed.
Yeah.